This is from the Tang Dynasty, 665 to 713. It's called The Song of Enlightenment by Yung Chin Xuan Chu. When criticized by others, let them wrong you. They will tire themselves trying to burn the sky with a torch. When I hear abuse, it is like drinking ambrosia. Melt it, and suddenly one enters the inconceivable. If we regard criticism as merit, the critics will become reliable friends. Do not hate those who slander you. How else can you manifest the unborn power of compassion? And from the Tibetan Book of the Dead. My consciousness, luminous and pure, inseparable part of the great radiating body, knows neither birth nor death. It is the unrelenting light. So, to look upon those who slander us as precious friends, why would we do that? Perhaps it's because if we react to ill will or to unfriendly speech, and it could be coming from within our own minds, then our reaction is a sign of suffering. We are suffering. And as long as we're suffering, we are not part of that unrelenting light. And we see ourselves separate. It's you, it's me, it's them, it's us. It's conflicted, it's divided, it's fragmented. If we study the mind, when we meditate, we can notice that when there's thinking going on, we can feel caught up. There are four ways that the mind is lax. It's actually in a posture of incompetence in terms of spiritual power. And one of them is tiredness. It's a mind that is sleepy, weary, and cannot focus. The other kind of a mind is a mind that is tense, very restless and agitated. And then outwardly as well, there is the distracted mind and the over-concentrated mind. The distracted mind is not able to stay present long enough to really understand what there is to know, what there is to investigate. And that pretty much reflects the majority of people. It feels like the world is very, very distracted, driven, and unable to settle in the same way. We're too much with the self, too involved, too critical. And that's a kind of mind that will wear itself out, caught up with one thing, like even ill will. Look at what happens when a leader is obsessed with hatred. So destructive. And this is not a mind that is well balanced, neither way, internally or externally. But when we don't identify with our thoughts and we're able to silence the mind, as we do in meditation, we become quiet, resilient. We become filled with light, filled with joy. filled with an inner happiness that cannot be tainted by the world. As long as we're there within the heart and there's peace and we're inwardly balanced, focused, not too tense, not too tired and unfocused, then we can really settle and investigate deeply, who is it? Who are we? What is it? Whatever thoughts come into the mind, they just float away. We don't latch onto them and get lost in them. We go deeply into the inner wisdom and we recognize the ending of our distress. But as soon as the mind is outwardly or inwardly distracted, caught up with agitation, ill will, and overthinking, we can be full of greed, hatred, and ignorance. Well, we are, but even more so. Until we can come back to that center point within us where the anger and the distress stop. They stop. Even if they stop for a few minutes, that's a very important teaching because it shows us what's possible. We want the world to stop, but it'll never stop. It's been practicing greed, hatred, and delusion forever. That's the nature of the human realm. When we look at the animal realm, what do? We watch the little chipmunks. We put little bits of treats for them. And we try to put them in different places so everyone gets a share. But they fight. And they'll go and protect both parts, not let anybody else eat so they can have it all. And we do that too, because we have animal nature, but we also have human nature. And the human nature is our saving grace. To be able to expand that human nature, to grow it and to mature it, we have to practice restraint. So when the mind is not behaving well, when it's too tense within, we have to soften that. When it's too lax, we have to energize it. And if we don't have the energy, we have to be patient, content, and practice more and more inwardly looking and trusting that the way to radiate that unrelenting light is to seek it and to trust that it's there. And not to say, oh, well, I can't do this. But to apply the right way of looking so that the mind can settle enough, so that we can condition it with something that's pure rather than with worldly distractedness, criticism, hatefulness, intolerance, impatience, ignorance. Because one moment of impatience that is allowed to settle will destroy our work. It's just like if you have one hole in this roof, how can we use this space? And the mind is like that. If it leaks, then the conditioning towards Nibbana cannot happen. The purification cannot happen to realize that state of deathlessness. And that's what we're striving for. So we have to properly teach and train the mind so that it will settle into a balanced energy, freedom from all these taints and the restlessness and the suffering. We want freedom from that. So actually we were busy not to be busy. We were busy to rest from the world. That kind of space is a blessing to come into that quiet. If you normally go somewhere and people welcome you, then it's a different kind of welcome. It's a welcome to join in the conversation and cups of tea and all of that, which is lovely. But there is another loveliness that we can establish ourselves and open so that others just come quietly and join. There's too little of that in the world. So the world keeps spinning, and we spin with it. Therefore, we have to reclaim the space in our own hearts. If we don't properly enter it and know that it's there, how can we reclaim it? It's like our true tribal land is there is an inward space, an interior deep within each of us that we can grow and cultivate, that we can populate with a mind that is silent, that is unified, that is harmless, that goes towards that which will enlighten us to the point where we will not feel divided. We will not experience this fragmentation. We will not suffer when people criticize us, because we will understand with compassion that they don't know what we share. They don't know that inner space. They are foreign to it. They're full of suffering themselves. So the most natural response to that is compassion rather than hatred. But that's not easy to do. But if we don't practice it, it can never happen. So just to know that that's possible, we take refuge in that inner silence, not in the noise of the world. And we see when we're taking refuge in the noise of the world, we stop and realize what we're doing and try to balance our activity, our energy, our involvement, our engagement with worldly activities, with worldly occupations, with worldly taints and troubles. Then we come back time and again and we condition the mind, we teach the mind, just like when you have a child. We heard about a family that adopted some children. They adopted 5 kids and 2 of them were too much trouble, so they gave them back. If we don't have the capacity to train our own minds, of course, how can we train anyone else? So we're trying to move and act and interact and relate to ourselves, to each other, and to the world from a place of knowledge. But it's not an ordinary knowledge. It's a wisdom that has very deep roots. And if we go deeply into the silence, we will see the truth of what we are and occupy that space. So the wisdom grows in us. And then we will be at one more and more. More and more that we reclaim that inner purity. We will be at one with this unrelenting light. It is the light of wisdom. It is enlightenment. We don't need to look to the world for our happiness, because no one will be able to destroy it, manipulate it, criticize it. There's nothing critical in there, but it's critical. It's absolutely vital, essential for our happiness. And yet it gets very little attention. Here, we're actually attending to a deep injury. We're all battered, injured, deflated, broken in some way. Whether it's financially, relationally, socially, the body, sickness, old age, the death of loved ones, loss. So many impacts in this life that rob us of our natural wellspring of this field of purity and love. But it is ever present within us. We have to find our way back to it. In spite of whatever suffering we've experienced, the suffering, the critic, the hateful speech, the enemy becomes our friend because they send us back into that pool of goodness within us so that we can offer it, so that we can know it and be strengthened by it. The true friend is the Buddha within us. The awakened mind is our truest friend. And we wake up little by little, just by knowing the possibility, trusting it, and working towards it. You see these plants? They always turn towards the sun. If you turn them this way, next day you come back, and they've reverted back to the sun. They are teaching us what to do. What's really important is, where do we abide with the conscious mind? The conscious mind is conscious here and now. And in what state is it abiding? And the Buddha gives us suggestions about what kind of state to abide in. One of the most important suggestions is the four divine abidings: loving kindness, goodwill, compassion, rejoicing in the well-being of others, and equanimity towards all conditions. Equanimity is the summum bonum, because the enlightened mind is equanimous. Equanimity does not mean indifferent, but it's wise, it's wisdom with compassion. We understand the nature of this realm. We understand the nature, the limitation of this world. Everything, all beings, all races, all buildings, all concoctions, all creations in this realm are impermanent. That's just how it is. So we focus not on what can be, but what is. What we can change with what is the wisdom to know what is true, to know the way things really are, and not expect them to be other than what they are. So if we expect anyone to be there forever, we're asking for suffering, because it's an unreasonable expectation. All of us, we will all disappear. And it's because we think that we won't disappear. We're attached to having everything as it is. But the one thing that we do know is everything will change. And it may change in ways that we don't like. We have no control over that. But we can align our minds with what is true. And when we take refuge in what is true, the suffering doesn't arise. It doesn't arise, but we turn whatever is there into a blessing. That's important. If we suffer because of the way things are not, because of how we want them to be, that's really egotistical. I want. It has to be like this. If it's not like this, it's no good. And the mind will just spin into depression or anger or fear. Fear of death, fear of loss, fear of change. We're here to go beyond that. When you meet somebody that's awake and is fearless, you find that people gravitate towards that being. The Buddha, when he was alive, I'm sure it was true with all the prophets, when they were walking on the earth, and on this earth there are great beings like that. And when they go somewhere, everybody wants to be with them and see them and hear them. That's how it is. Like when the Buddha, he created so much momentum, uplifting people. For those who paid attention, they didn't have any digital or internet communications in those days, yet he made such a lasting imprint on the world. For those who paid attention, in terms of nonviolence and peace. But the world carries on not being peaceful, being violent, because the nature of the world. So we try to practice in the footsteps of those who came and taught what we know is healing for the heart, not what is poison for the heart. And if we do that, no matter what happens to us, we will be able to withstand the suffering. We have to. That will be our great spiritual test. Everything else is impermanent. Even the wars. These wars, you know, they're going to go one way or another, and they'll end. And then everything will be different for a while, and then there'll be some other fight. 25 years ago, I gave a talk, and I started the talk by saying, during these times of great atrocities, and I thought, really? In 98? What atrocities? But there were great atrocities happening in Kosovo and in Africa. The Houthis and the were chopping each other up in pieces. The world is always erupting in horror and terror. It doesn't stop. If we look back in history, there's been so much. So if others can't do it, we can. That's the choice we have. But if we keep focusing on their hatred, we just get upset. So we have to keep focusing on what we have within us that is not hateful, that is stronger than hate, that is peaceful, that is true refuge. We have to cultivate that and offer that to each other, to ourselves, to the world.